Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. We'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You could also chime in using hashtag Giants Chat. And we want to remind fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. We will look ahead to the Dolphins matchup. The Giants are not addressing the media today, but they will start working on addressing the media tomorrow as the practice report will also be released. But we'll start to look ahead to the matchup with the Dolphins. There is some Giants news first, Anita, and let's get to that. The Giants placed two players on injured reserve yesterday. Zach DeAussie, their longtime long snapper, fourth-round pick in 2007, had never missed a game since he joined the Giants, a wrist injury, so he is done for the season. In addition to him, tight end Larry Dinell with that neck injury has been put on IR. Now, Larry had spoken to the media about a week ago and seemed to indicate it was going to be quite some time till he got back on the football field, so that's not necessarily a surprise. To take their spots, they did bring in a new long snapper, and they brought in a player who's been with the New England Patriots, Danny Aiken, so a veteran will take the spot of Zach DeAussie, and then cornerback Tremaine Jacobs, who was with the team a few weeks ago, was waived, put back on the practice squad. He takes the place of Larry Dinell.
So, unfortunately, more injuries that this team has to deal with. You've seen next man up a lot of times, and that's what's going to have to happen here. I've always said this. I feel like my favorite job in the whole world, like if I had a child, if I had a son right now, I'd start teaching him how to long snap at like the age of two. I think it's the best job in the world. So, and I love, absolutely adore Zach DeAussie. Leader, really big on special teams. Obviously, I think that's where this team will take a hit in regard to missing him. But just a leader in that locker room, a leader on the football field. But again, I mean, it's just, to me, it's the theme of 2015, not just with the Giants. I mean, look at what's going on with the Patriots. Look at what's going on with the Baltimore Ravens.
A lot of teams.
I just feel like the theme of 2015 is next man up.
Well, we've seen that across the board, and Larry Dinell has been out for the last four games, so we've already seen what Will Tye has done in terms of this offense, Jerome Cunningham, but Ty's going to be the main tight end, Anita, moving forward in terms of the guy that's going to probably get the most snaps, and we've seen a number of big plays over the last few games. You know, Will Tye's had 45-yard catches, he had 20-plus-yard catches. The middle of the field seems to be his comfort zone, and that certainly is key, especially with, you know, some of the inconsistencies that we've seen out of the rest of the receiving corps. They're going to need a player like Will Tye and need it to help move the chains moving forward.
Yeah. You don't see a big emphasis with the tight end position in the offense that Eli Manning is running, as opposed to, let's say, like a Carolina Panthers team or, the Tennessee Titans or the New England Patriots. You just don't see a big emphasis. But also keep in mind now some injuries in regard to the offensive line. Eric Flowers is dealing with an ankle injury. So more so than a pass-catching tight end that really needs to step up here, the Giants really need a tight end who's going to step up and help with pass protect, especially if Eric Flowers is not going to be able to go this coming week against Miami.
Well, they are going to potentially have to get creative in terms of the point that you brought to the forefront there, whether it be some additional running backs, Rashad Jennings, Shane Vereen, or utilizing Jerome Cunningham and Will Tye as extra protection, because Eric Flowers, we're not going to know his true status until tomorrow, but immediately after the game, they did acknowledge the fact that it was an ankle injury. He was carted off the field. He was seen on crutches after the game, so his status very much up in the air. So you're likely going to move Justin Pugh back to left tackle, which we had seen, and then Bobby Hart's going to have another opportunity at the right tackle spot. And this is an offensive line over the last few weeks, Anita, that has surrendered three sacks in each of the last three games. So nine sacks in the last three games. They had only surrendered 12 sacks in the first nine games. Now, pass protection is going to be important moving forward, especially with Carolina and Minnesota on the horizon. They're going to go up against a lot of teams that bring the pressure.
more concerned about Carolina right now. You've got, again, talking about teams that really are suffering a lot of injuries. And Linval Joseph, we know him very well. He was once a Giant. Now he's injured for the Minnesota Vikings. Look at what the Seattle Seahawks and Russell Wilson was able to do. Four touchdowns, three passing. Actually, I got this stat. Russell Wilson rushed for his first rushing touchdown against the Minnesota Vikings in Week 13. I mean, that kind of blew me away. This is one of the best scrambling quarterbacks in the NFL. But this Minnesota Vikings team, they're riddled by injury as well. Defensively, they don't have the manpower, the firepower that we've seen like they did in the start of the season. And an interesting matchup they have ahead of them with Carson Palmer and the Arizona Cardinals. In fantasy, I know the show is sponsored by DraftKings. Carson Palmer, I think, is going to be one of those guys on DraftKings that's going to be utilized again because this Minnesota Vikings defense is not what it was a few weeks ago. So more concerned about Carolina than I am then. But granted, I get it. It's still 3 weeks away. Guys can heal. Who knows? Linval Joseph might be back by then. But still, this is a Minnesota Vikings defense that isn't the stud defense we saw at the beginning of the season.
Well, specifically for this week, Carolina, Minnesota clearly on the horizon. Miami is a team that lost one of its top pass rushers, Cameron Wake, who's out for the season. However, with that being said, you look at their sacks, they're middle of the pack. They're not necessarily in the top of the league in terms of total sacks, but Olivier Vernon is very effective at getting to the quarterback, and Dominican Sue is a two-way player. He can give you pressure. He can clog the middle. You know, this is going to be a defensive line, Anita, that I feel, you know, a lot of people, you look at the Dolphins' record, you say they're 5-7, they made a number of coaching changes, they've struggled, but, you know, their defensive line is the heart and soul of their defense. 90% of the pressure comes from the front four. The linebackers barely have any sacks, any pressure whatsoever. Corners and safeties are not bringing the pressure. They rely on that front four. And you look at the names, Vernon and Sue, those two guys you can't necessarily overlook.
Yeah, and really, I will say this, and I've said this before, the Giants' offensive line has impressed me this season. I was not expecting Eli to have the time, and granted, you're like, what are you talking about? He doesn't even get 3 seconds. Well, I was expecting, I guess what I'm saying is I was expecting to have Eli on his back more so than we've seen. Granted, as you said, 9 sacks the past 3 weeks, that's not great. And also, you've got to credit Eli Manning for the fact that he's getting rid of the ball so quickly. And you've got Dwayne Harris as well as Odell Beckham Jr. and Shane Vereen out of that backfield kind of getting open quickly in those short intermediate passing routes, which I think they're going to really need to bring into this game. So,
well, and what's also interesting in terms of those sack numbers that we were talking about earlier, Anita, first half of the season, even more than the first half of the season, this offensive line has stayed healthy. I mean, that's been such a big difference compared to what we've seen in previous seasons. Ereck Flowers has been the only offensive lineman that missed a game in those first 9 contests. Then the last 3 contests, all 5 starters have either missed a game or have suffered an injury during the course of the game, plus they lose Jeff Schwartz for the season. So, you know, continuity had been a huge storyline in the early stages of the season, and it's no coincidence that that coincided with solid pass protection. Now when you move guys in and out, the continuity is not there. You know, there all of a sudden opens up some opportunities for the opposing defenses.
So how do you see the starting five? Let's say, hypothetically speaking, if Ereck Flowers cannot go. So moving Pugh out to left tackle.
To take over Ereck Flowers.
Right.
Then I would put
Dallas Reynolds,
who came in the last contest. Correct.
Richburg
at left guard. Richburg is your center. John Jerry at right guard. And then Bobby Hart at your right tackle.
And hopefully, fingers crossed, maybe Marshall Newhouse is ready to come back.
Correct. That's right. Newhouse could very well come back. He had a back injury, so he missed the last contest. We'll see what his practice is like tomorrow and Friday moving forward.
But really, with Sue being in the middle of that defensive line from Miami, this is going to be a tall task if you do have Dallas Reynolds starting, John Jerry starting, with Richburg in the middle. I mean, that's those three against Sue and how they counter, how they double him, that's going to be really intriguing.
Absolutely. The interior lineman for the Giants offense versus the interior defensive lineman for the Miami Dolphins. I think that's a key matchup. It's a key matchup for the sake of, can the Giants get some success on the ground? That's the first entity. And Miami's 30th against the run. However, with that being said, the Redskins were 30th against the run, Anita, 2 weeks ago, and the Giants didn't have much success on the ground. So I don't necessarily put too much stock or substance in those statistics. And then the second part of the equation is the pass protection. You know, Sue, he may not be lighting it up in the sack department, but he can get a quarterback hit And sometimes you need to put a double team his way because he's very easy at beating one-on-one coverage. So that's going to be a key point of emphasis this week for the Giants offensive line, to keep him in check and also not allow Olivier Vernon, who I think is an underrated defensive lineman who certainly has stepped up in the absence of Cameron Wake. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We'll get to your tweets as we move along here. Let's open up the phone lines on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live, looking ahead to the Miami Dolphins, reviewing what has transpired over the course of the season. Let's start things off with Lloyd in Pennsylvania. Lloyd, welcome to the program. What do you have for us?
Thank you. Good morning, Lance, Anita. Anita, I'm a big fan of yours, and I'm a little nervous now that I know that you're on a you're there in the studio.
Okay, don't be nervous.
She won't bite. I promise.
I promise. I only him. No, but welcome in. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And just pretend we're like hanging out at a bar, drinking like some beer. What's up?
Okay. First, I was calling to defend Jerry Reese because I know I've heard a lot of criticism of him over the last couple of weeks. And one of the things that I have to say to people, my fellow fans as Giant fans, when the season started, if you didn't have somebody else in mind that you wanted in place of the linebackers that we have, the safeties that we have, some of the wide receivers that we have, I haven't heard anybody really say, this is who I wanted instead of who we have. And their agent said they wanted to come here. They said they wanted to come here, and the Giants didn't go out and get them. Until I actually hear something like that from the fans out there who want to criticize everyone that Jerry Reese brings in, as far as I'm concerned, he's done a great job. The only person that I have an issue with, and this is more of a performance issue on the field after the fact, because once the season starts, you have who you have. And it's the same way throughout every team in the NFL. I'm not that big on Reuben Randall this year, and I'm hoping that they don't bring him back. I have a lot of criticism for him, but other than that, my philosophy is if you pay somebody the league minimum, my expectation is that they give you the minimum to show that they're worth being on the field. And if they're giving you better than that and you want to bring them back next year, great. But backups are backups, and when they come in to replace a starter, your expectation can't be that the offensive line is going to be as good as it would be if you had all of your starters when all of the backups are in. So, and that's the same way throughout every line on the field, whether it's wide receivers, offensive line, defensive line. JPP was out for half the season. We don't have John Beeson, Victor Cruz. If you told me that those people weren't going to be in the lineup and you were hoping for a better than 8-8 record this year, I would have said that you were crazy. But now knowing after the fact they're not there, you just work with who you've got. I don't have any criticism for Jerry Reese for that. You can't predict injury. His job pretty much stopped at about he did 90% of his job before the season starts, and now it's just tweaking as you go. You can't really have a game plan for every single person that goes down. That's just my opinion.
Well, Lloyd, you're 100% right. I mean, it's impossible to predict the future, and you can't anticipate how many guys are going to get banged up, when they're going to get banged up. You know, clearly the Giants thought Will Beatty and Victor Cruz were going to be back at one point this season. Unfortunately, the injury bug didn't cooperate, and those are two players that are legitimate starters that clearly are going to bolster your rotation. New England, I think, is a good example to utilize, and you referenced this earlier, Anita, and Lloyd, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. That's a team that has been ravaged by injuries on the offensive line. I mean, they've gone through 2-3 tackles on both sides. Guards, centers have been interchangeable, and even Tom Brady's taken his fair share of hits this year.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Yeah, and especially the past few games he has. And this is a Patriots team. Now they've lost 2 in a row, and believe it or not, some people think they're going to lose this week in Houston. They're taking on the Houston Texans, who Bill O'Brien has this team really kind of peaking right now. J.J. Watt and that defense is playing well. Brian Hoyer is healthy. He's back. Who can stop DeAndre Hopkins? Really no one, let's face it. And so this is a team that very well might put the Patriots to the test. I mean, here we are just a few weeks ago, Lance. We're sitting here talking about the Patriots making a run, maybe going undefeated. And now some people believe that they might lose their third one in a row in Houston in Week 14.
Well, and that's what happens when you lose Gronkowski, you lose Edelman, you lose a number of offensive linemen. You know, as the caller indicated, there's only so much depth that you can have on a team to make up for 5 or 6 key playmakers who go down. And the Giants have had to deal with some injuries. I mean, there has been some positives in terms of guys who have stepped up. Jasper Brinkley, for example, I think is an example of a player who, you know, was let go by the Cowboys, was with the Vikings, got an opportunity to catch on with the Giants late. Beeson goes down. He needed some time to learn the playbook, and he stepped up. I mean, he's been very opportunistic, a number of forced fumbles that have served as some game-changing plays. So you like to see that. You like to see guys across the board step up and take advantage of their opportunities, because we've seen time and time again, it's not just the NFL, the NBA, NHL, you name it, guy goes down, unsung hero comes in, and all of a sudden, you know, he becomes a household name. That's why it's so important to take advantage of your opportunities. But I don't think that's unique for the Giants, Anita. You could say that for any place.
So so because of the Thursday night Green Bay Packer Detroit game, while I was up in Bristol this weekend, sat in the war room with Golden Tate and was watching the games. And so it was pretty cool sitting next to him, and we were watching the Seattle Seahawks-Minnesota Vikings game. And Thomas Rawls was just running for days. Keep in mind, this is an undrafted rookie. Undrafted rookie.
They've done a good job with
that. And he's come in, and he's put up better numbers than Marshawn Lynch. And I turned to Tate, and I said, Tate, I said, what is it about the Seattle Seahawks? They get all these guys that they pick up, like, in the sixth and seventh rounds, and undrafted guys, and they come in. And he said, I know. He said, Anita, it's crazy. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do it.
And
so, you know, it's just
Richard Sherman, too.
Sometimes, you know, I'm sure it's having a great staff. It's having a good scouting department. And also, I think part of it is just being lucky in finding guys that, you know, that have that heart and maybe are at the bottom of the barrel, aren't getting the respect that they feel that they deserve. So then they're putting in the extra hours. They're putting in the extra time because they feel so slighted that they went in the later rounds, or they didn't even go at all, or they weren't even invited to the combine. It's just, it's really, I mean, the NFL, it's a crazy league, man.
It
really
is very unpredictable.
It is. It's so crazy.
As we've seen in some of the results the last few weeks. Let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513. B-Lo is in New Orleans. B-Lo, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, Lance, Anita? How y'all doing today?
Welcome in.
Doing well,
welcome
B-Lo.
In.
How's everything with you?
All right, I just want to tell all the Giants fans, Giants Nation, just calm down, man. We've been here before. This is our game. You know, we like people to count us out. And then, wow, we come back with a four-game win streak. You know, that's just how we play. Everybody is playing into our hands. Right now in our division, we're only back, what, one game?
Well, they're tied for first place right now. They're tied. It's a three-way tie for first place with the Redskins and the Eagles. Cowboys are a game back.
Okay, we 2-3 in the division or something like that?
Correct.
We lost three
in the division. 2-3 in the division. Yeah.
Okay, so we back one game on everybody. We gotta beat the Eagles to be, you know, to be relevant. But this all gonna play at the end of the day. Everybody in the NFC East is gonna have the same record. It's gonna come down to who can get these games at this last stretch, these last four games. And that's our recipe. We always do it. Everybody just remain calm. We still have the core guys on our offense. We still have Eli. We still have Beckham. We still have Randall. We still have Dennis. We still have Vereen. We still have Harris. We still have weapons. A lot of people are missing their core. We're not missing the core. We didn't start the season off with Victor Cruz. We had a banged-up line to begin with. We had a put-together line to begin with. This is nothing new.
Well, the line was healthy, though, at the beginning of the season, B-Lo, in fairness. I mean, they were missing Will Beatty, but
they
knew their five at the beginning
of the season. Here. We didn't know what Flowers was going to do at their left tackle. You know, we didn't know how Pugh was going to hold up. But everybody did just fine.
Well, they
and
did.
Last week game, I feel like they did fine. I mean, they gave up some hits, few sacks, but overall, I said it did fine.
Well, I mean, the
it's
defense
like
obviously
the defense
struggled to make a stop.
In the backfield, you got four people around Eli every time you get ready to throw the ball. It's not like that.
All right, B-Lo, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. In terms of pass protection, I mean, we had talked about that off the top. In terms of the last three games, they have given up three sacks. Eli's done a good job getting rid of the football. They're still trying to find that rhythm on the ground, Anita. That's, though, something that could very well be a difference maker as you get into the cold weather. Now, they're going to go into Minnesota. May not be an ideal situation to throw the ball. You'd like to be able to pound the football. Who knows what the weather's going to be like here on January 3rd?
I don't know. 3rd. We haven't even gotten our first snow yet.
Well, I'm speculating.
And I don't want to run. I don't want to snow.
It's understandable the temperature is going to change.
I mean, I've been waiting for it to change, not wanting it to, of course, and it hasn't. I mean, we've really been blessed with a great winter this year. And the temperatures, it's so funny. People are traveling down to Miami for this Giants-Miami game. It's raining down there. It's humid. My mom still lives down there. She's miserable. This weekend is supposed to be one of the nicest weekends up here in New York. Who knew? So I'm not going to buy on weather because it's been an insane weather year for us. In looking at these next four games, the only game that I really have some big concerns with is Carolina. It's the only game I really have, like, I'm really, really, I just don't feel good about it. I think all the other three games, I think the Giants, and I get it, there's been some more injuries, Zach Diassi, Larry Donnell, not sure what's going to happen with Flowers, how soon he can get back, I get all that. I still feel that Miami's beatable. I don't think they are a very good Dolphins team right now. They made a lot of changes this year during the season, getting rid of their head coach, changing the offensive coordinator. Now it's a much different offense with Ryan Tannehill and him being able to, I guess he's able to audible a little bit more. He had an off week last week against the Ravens where he should have just, I mean, the Ravens defense, they're horrible. The Miami Dolphins should have had a lot more success offensively and they didn't. Minnesota, as I said, they're dealing with a lot of injuries. And they don't have a really stud quarterback, and not a knock on Teddy Bridgewater, because I love Teddy B. He's just one of those serviceable quarterbacks. He plays smart, heads-up football. He doesn't turn the ball over, and it begins and ends with Adrian Peterson. In Philadelphia, let me tell you something. It just might come down to that last game, Philadelphia. That game might be flexed, by the way. If things kind of fall into play...
Yeah.
Also, from what I understand, a big game in Week 17, if the Denver Broncos and the Cincinnati Bengals continue to win like they do, that Week 17 matchup against the two will decide home field advantage throughout the playoffs. So that's a game that might be flexed as well.
Yeah, Giants-Eagles, I mean, it really depends on what happens down the stretch here, as the last caller was alluding to. I mean, I think if it comes down to clearly tiebreakers, you know, the best the Giants could do in the division is 3-3. They just have the Eagles left. Those other teams have two divisional games left. That enables them to perhaps get in the position of 4-2. And 4-2 obviously is better than 3-3. So, you know, the Giants can control their own destiny with respect to they got to win out. You know, you win the games, you don't worry about what everybody else is going to do. But if everybody wins out, you know, then it could become essentially a mathematical equation. And then it's going to come down to those divisional games early in the season that could very well determine the outcome. 201-939-4513. Christian is in New York. Christian, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I called a few days ago about Odell Beckham, and a lot of writers were saying that, you know, he has such a bad record since he's been in the league. Like, how is he so great? But, you know, I was just saying that it's really not his fault. I mean, there's so many other players on the field. But I did want to mention, I didn't really have time, that, you know, one of the holes in his game seems to be not putting the ball away right when he catches it. It seems like in the last few weeks since we played the Patriots, teams have been putting a lot of emphasis on trying to swap the ball out of his hands once he gets it. And I understand that's something that you'd normally do anyway, but ever since that Patriots game, it seems like a little bit of a theme. And I remember before we even drafted him, I was watching his scouting report, and scouts were even saying that he has trouble keeping the ball when he's in traffic. And they were talking about how he's not just putting the ball away as soon as he possibly can.
Well, you had the play against the Patriots. I mean, that was a tremendous play by Butler. I mean, somebody's got to at least tip their cap to the opposition. I thought Malcolm Butler made a tremendous play to prevent Odell Beckham from getting that completion. And like you mentioned, that, at the end of the day, Christian, is the goal for everybody, whether it's Odell Beckham, Calvin Johnson. I mean, the goal for any corner in this league is if the guy makes the catch, the next best thing is to knock the ball away. So I don't really think that they're going out of their way to do that to Odell Beckham compared to how any other corner looks at any other wide receiver in this league.
Yeah, and also, listen, when something like that happens, and that was such a crucial fumble at such a crucial time of potentially the Giants upsetting the Patriots, I think a lot of times defensive coordinator coaches feel like that's something that's going to stick in the head of a player – So then, you know, next team that comes up, they're going to concentrate on that, and they're going to try to cause a fumble themselves. And maybe just by other teams watching a lot of game film, they see that this is something that now is occurring more and more. I mean, you know, listen, the NFL is a copycat league. We know that.
Well, but other than the knockaway by Butler, I mean, Beckham did have an opportunity to grab a touchdown in this last game against the Jets. He didn't hold on to that. That was in traffic with about three defenders in his vicinity, so it was different than that Malcolm Butler play. But, you know, Christian, I mean, other than those two plays, which happened in the last 2 weeks, I don't see this really being a trend where there's multiple examples that he's not putting the ball away.
Well, I noticed the touchdowns. Those are easy to notice. But in the Patriots game, Beckham would have had three more catches, but again, it got swiped out of his hands. And I understand on 10-yard plays, it can go unnoticed easily. But you know, I hate to see this become consistent, because you're talking about four or five passes in the last 3-4 weeks. But I have a question for Anita, because I know you're not big on this stuff, Lance. But
what am I not
too
big
early?
On?
Is it too early to start saying that Odell's a top 10 receiver?
Oh, what? Are you talking about in the NFL, or are you talking about fantasy?
No, you're
yeah,
talking about rankings.
In the NFL.
Yeah, in the NFL.
I think you can make an argument. I think you can make an argument that he should be in the top 10. What, he's got five straight games now over 100
yards?
Yep. And you know what and thank you for the phone call, by the way. You know what I love about it is that, you know, where's – defenses come in and they concentrate on Odell Beckham Jr. Could you imagine if the Giants had like a legitimate 1B or even a legitimate 2 wide receiver? It's a shame Victor Cruz, unfortunately, could not make it back on the football field this season, because I think it'd be absolutely frightening if Odell played opposite a wide receiver that got a lot of respect from defenses in the NFL. And so what's amazing is that he's putting up these numbers each and every week. Granted, yes, he's getting a ton of targets. When you look around the NFL, how many wide receivers are getting 18, 19, 20 targets a game? Not many. And so he's getting the opportunity to put up these numbers, but when he gets the ball, he does. You know what my favorite play was this year? Was this past game. Odell kicks the ball in overtime, penalty, they go back. I'm dying to talk to him and ask him, did you go in the huddle and tell Eli, come to me? I will make up for this. I'm dying to ask him
that. The fourth and seven that he then converted.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, that was my favorite play this season from Odell. You know, he's just beyond him just putting up all the numbers and really getting open and having the big hands and making the great catches. You can count on him. You could just count on him. He's a baller. He's got a great heart. He loves to win. So, yeah, I mean, I think you can definitely make an argument that Odell Beckham is in the top 10.
Well, and the other thing to evaluate just wide receivers in general in the league, you know, what do they do when they're not even catching the football? You know, how much attention are they drawing?
Hopefully blocking.
Correct. Well, that's one aspect, but also just the attention that they're bringing over to their side of the field to perhaps get favorable one-on-one matchups
right, for
the opposite side. For example, if you looked at the Jets in the fourth quarter, I think this is an interesting parallel. Eric Decker was very quiet for the majority of the game. He did all of his damage in the fourth quarter, and the Jets were talking about this after the contest. Todd Bowles was asked about this in his postgame presser. What happened is the Giants changed their defensive approach. They started to focus and pull the defense a little bit more towards Brandon Marshall, who had a monster game. So now Decker's got some more favorable matchups. Decker can utilize the middle of the field. That's why his receptions went up, specifically on that final drive to help set up the Brandon Marshall game-tying touchdown. That's what, when you have complementary wide receivers and other weapons, that's how you help to get a fluid offense going. So, you know, that's something that, you know, we saw last season when Larry Donnell was healthy, Victor Cruz in the early start of the season. But, you know, when guys go down, you need everybody else to step up so that you maintain that continuity. But, you know, in terms of just looking at Odell Beckham, you draw pass interference calls, you block, you draw traffic towards your side. That, to me, elevates your standing in addition to what you just do in terms of receptions and receiving yards. Let's head back to the phone lines. Drew is in Virginia. Drew, what's happening?
Lance, hey Anita, how you guys doing?
Welcome in.
How's everything with you?
Good, man, good. Hey, first and foremost, man, the Odell Beckham curse, man, that's a bunch of baloney. Because I've heard some of the fans and, you know, some of these things that all the Giants haven't won since Odell was here and this and that. That's a bunch of noise. There's no credence in that. I just want to say that.
I didn't even hear that. That's the first time I'm hearing that. When you said curse, I was thinking the cover of Madden. I didn't know what you were referring to.
No, there's been people calling in saying that, you know, the Giants, you know, haven't really won anything. Odell makes these great catches, but the Giants continue to lose.
Well, but here's the thing, Drew. And I know you're not buying that, but if you're just looking at it from that perspective, and I'll give you a stat which probably a lot of people saw, and I read this on the radio broadcast because it was interesting that it jumped
out.
Just
the one
to me.
That Greeny?
No.
75 seconds?
No, not that one.
Go ahead.
This is just about Odell Beckham.
Okay.
That games in which Odell Beckham has had over 100 receiving yards, the Giants are just 5-9. That's four games below 500 when Odell Beckham is having his best production. So it jumps out to you like, well, wait a minute. Every time Odell Beckham puts up monster numbers, Giants four games below 500. So I'm sure a lot of people have seen that statistic, Drew, and that feeds into that storyline. But at the same time, there's three facets to every football team. And you could look in this league, there are offenses that are prolific, that in the blink of an eye they could put points on the board like that. At the same time, they don't have a defense that matches that intensity, or special teams doesn't necessarily provide consistency. So, you know, you could have one guy that dominates, but show me what your defense does, show me what your special teams does. That's going to be more reflective on your record as opposed to what one wide receiver does on the football field.
Again, which is why I don't put any credence in that argument. But at any rate, man, that's not the main reason I called. I just wanted to put that out there. You know, I'm looking at this schedule here, and let me say this for me, okay? I'm a sports fan first and a team fan second. So for me, I look at my teams from a sporting perspective, from the other teams. And that's always how I've approached it. So, you know, I'm not one of these fans that, you know, I can only see my team through that jersey-colored lenses. That said, for the Giants fan in me, I think we have a very winnable schedule here. I have to agree with Anita. Really the biggest game that scares me and I actually got us down as a loss is Carolina. That said, for the sports fan in me, I'll go through the teams real quick. For me, Miami, I think we won that game. I really don't see no reason why we win that, why we don't. Carolina, yeah, that's going to be a tough game. Minnesota, for me, is a question mark. And I hate to say, man, but, you know, Philly has our number. I don't care what the teams are, this or that or anything else. We just continually struggle against Philly. So, you know, in the Giants fan in me, I'm going to go Miami win. I'm going to go Carolina loss. I'm going to go Minnesota win. And I'm going to hope that we beat Philly. For the sports fan in me, I'm going with Carolina loss. Minnesota, that's a huge question mark for me, honestly, because we're on the road. And Philly a loss. So at best I got us going 2-2.
Well, 2-2 would get you to 7-9 if we use your rationale, Drew. And who knows? I mean,
right.
7-9 could very well win this division at this point.
Have you taken a look at and Drew? Thank you for the phone call. Have you taken a look at the other schedules, like in regard to Washington?
In terms of who Washington
and
Dallas?
Yeah. So who has? Is it Washington that has like? Per se, the easiest schedule from here on out.
Well, I don't
right?
know. I didn't put the records together. I know Washington, they're going to have, obviously, some tough games coming up. But remember, they still have two divisional games left. They have Dallas and Philadelphia. That's why I focus more on that, because if we are going to put together all these equations, and if you say, let's say, you know, multiple teams end up at 8-8, Anita, or multiple teams end up at 7-9, it's probably going to come down to a tiebreaker, which means it's the divisional record. So, you know, probably the best thing for the Giants is everybody beats each other up so that they can't get to 4-2 in the division. See, the Redskins have an opportunity. The Eagles and the Cowboys have an opportunity. The Cowboys have the best record right now. They're 2-3. They're 3-2, excuse me. So if Dallas beats Washington and the cards fall into place, Dallas could end up at the end of the season with the best divisional record amongst all of these teams. And if it comes down to a tiebreaker, that's where I would be concerned about. So those, to me, are the important ones. Philly plays Washington. Dallas plays Washington still.
So,
those are
but
two big games.
This week, Washington's at Chicago.
Correct, yeah.
Philadelphia is home against the Buffalo Bills. You got LeSean McCoy going back to Philadelphia. That's dangerous. And
Dallas has Green Bay.
And Dallas is at Green Bay. Just FYI.
Yeah, and those are all three losable games for all three of those teams. Chicago's back in the playoff hunt, but has been up and down. Buffalo's fighting for a postseason
spot.
Yeah,
but look, I thought last week, who thought Philadelphia would be able to,
well,
to beat New England?
More of a reason.
Who would have thought that the Dallas would beat Washington in our nation's capital? I mean,
Well, I don't know if that's that big of a surprise. I mean,
it was a
surprise. Games can really
surprise
flip a coin,
as the first time the Dallas Cowboys won a game without Tony Romo at the helm. I mean, and on the road, Washington plays really well at home. Yeah, so that was a surprise for me.
Well, and that's another key stat that you just hit on, the fact that Washington has yet to win on the road, and they have a few road games left. So that's another thing. Will that trend end? Will that trend continue? If that trend continues, then, you know, Washington's going to be in the ballpark of 2-2, 1-3 potentially down the stretch because they have not fared very well on the road. So there's so many things that are in play. Matt Castle, you know, now one win under his belt. Do they continue to ride that, or do they resort back to their old tricks without Tony Romo? And then Philadelphia, which has shown flashes, the good flashes against New England, and then the bad flashes against Detroit on Thanksgiving. The identity of all four of these teams is so much up in the air right now, it's impossible to say that there's really a front runner, Anita.
Right.
I mean, how can you look at any of these teams and say, this team's in the driver's seat versus this team? They've all had their fair share of ups and downs, which I guess makes for an interesting race. It makes fans sit on the edge of their seat and bite their nails. I understand it's uncomfortable from that perspective, but I look at this as completely wide open. I don't think anyone has a significant edge other than, as I mentioned, that divisional tiebreaker. Dallas is in a position to have the edge, assuming they beat Washington at the end of the season. But if Dallas loses its next three games, it's irrelevant whether or not they go 4-2 in the division.
It's going to make for a fun last 4 weeks, that's for sure.
Indeed. We want to remind fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you've never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy football. Just pick your contest, pick your players, and if you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Let's head back to the phone lines at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. I know a few of you had questions about the Dolphins. We'll get to that in a little bit. Anita Marks, Lance Medow with you here on Wednesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. And let's check in with who we got next, Bill in New Jersey. Bill, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, Bill. What do you have for us?
One thing real quick. I want to say to everybody, been reading a lot with the online with a lot of Giants fans and stuff. You know, obviously frustrated with the losses. Stop blaming Eli Manning for everything. It really gets old after a while, and that guy is one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL. We're not losing because of him, and you know, in fact, he's. Seems like he's one of the only people that shows up, you know, wanting to win sometimes, you know, that doesn't get down on himself. But, you know, one thing that's frustrating me right now is the game plan, the play calling. You know, we're getting down a couple minutes left in the game, and you got Eli Manning, you got Odell Beckham. I know Josh Brown missed the field goal, but, you know, he's clutch. Why are they waiting until the end of the game to start taking shots and let Eli Manning do his thing, you know, to score points? Seems like Ben McAdoo's just being a little too conservative. And
Beckham had that touchdown, Bill, early in the game against the Jets.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, you know, it just seems like, you know, it's, you know, third down and 15 and, you know, running a draw up the middle when, you know, the running game, you know, has been struggling the whole game.
Bill, a lot of times, thank you for the phone call. A lot of times you call that play because, you know, the defense is going to be sending the kitchen sink and that's how you counter with a draw or with a screen. You know, when a quarterback's not getting 3 seconds and it's third and 15, he's not, by the time the defensive players get to him, they're not even going to be at the 15-yard mark to get the first down. So you've got to get creative. And I'll say this, you know, there's an ebb and flow to a football game. Defenses, offenses come out with a strategy. I'm sure you know this. You know, probably the first 12 to 16 plays are already scripted out for offenses when they do take the field. Then there's a few series, of course, where they start getting creative. Then they go in at the half, and then both teams adjust. Defenses change, offenses change. There's an ebb and flow to a football game. And then keep in mind, Giants were up by 10 points at one point. So now you've got a Jets defense that now they change their defensive style heading into the fourth quarter because they're down by 10. So you can't – I don't think it's fair to sit back and say, well, why are we waiting till the last minute to really let Eli Manning kind of loose? You know, there's a game plan in place, and defenses change throughout the course of the game. So –
Well, I thought they took their fair share of chances with Beckham, as I mentioned, even early in the contest. I didn't see a huge disparity where things picked it up a notch, perhaps, late in the contest. I actually wanted to bring up the game log just to look at what transpired on third down on this last game to reference what the last caller, Bill, was alluding to. And you look at the plays that at least were run on those third downs late in the game. So here, I'm starting in the fourth quarter. Now, this was a drive, actually, that began late in the third quarter. This was the one that was plagued by penalties. It went from 5 minutes left in the third quarter all the way till about 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter. They faced a third and nine. Eli Manning threw to Orleans Darkwa for 10 yards. They faced a third and six. Manning had to scramble on that play as a last resort. Then they faced a third and 20. Now, keep in mind, the reason they faced a third and 20, as I mentioned, got 10 yards forward, moved 10 yards back because of penalties. So on a third and 20, they actually were penalized on that play. The Jets were penalized, excuse me. So that set up a new first down. So that didn't necessarily count. On another third and 10, the Jets picked up a defensive pass interference call against Buster Screen. So that advanced the drive. And then on third and 18 of that drive, Manning went deep down the field to Reuben Randall for a 16-yard gain. That was the play right before fourth and two. So that doesn't spell out conservative calls to me. Then on the next drive, third and six, Manning went to Vereen to try to pick up a short first down. And then we went into overtime. The third and one became a fourth and six because of the penalty. That was the play you referred to, Beckham making up for kicking the ball. And that was a play first down.
I know a lot of people love that one catch that he made diving in the end zone. I have to say, that has to be my favorite play from him this year. Like I said, I'm dying to talk to him to see, did he go in that huddle and say, I got you, Eli. I got you. Let me make up for this. Because, I mean, that was just such a great catch. He's just so talented, man. He's so fun to watch. It's like, it's really unbelievable.
Well, I know he was in the locker room after the game. This I did hear. And they were asking him, the media, about, you know, why'd you kick the football? Were you frustrated and so forth? And then, you know, he said, listen, I made the play after that, so it didn't come back to haunt us. That was at least his rationale as to, I'm not going to focus on the negative. I came back, I made a play, and it really didn't dictate the outcome of the game when it was all said and done. That was right. At least his initial reaction to that. All right, let's head back to the phone lines here at 201-939-4513. Andre is in Rochester. Andre, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, Josh?
Doing well, Andre. What do you got for us?
Yeah, actually, I think Beckham said that he was kicking the ball back into the huddle.
He did reference that, yes, that he was trying to kick the ball back towards the line of scrimmage.
I wanted to touch on this guy, Reuben Randall, man. What is his issue? It's like he doesn't want to be a Giant. He's out there, and he's just running the plays, and sometimes he's not even doing it. And I'm wondering how many interceptions Eli got because of him.
Well, I don't know that answer. I mean, Eli just has 10 interceptions on the season. I mean, he's having a career year. So, you know, the mishaps have not been very high. I'd have to look that up. It's a good question, Andre. I don't know what his distribution on those interceptions. I do know the ones that were deflected against the Washington Redskins, you know, one was Vereen, one was Dwayne Harris. That had nothing. Oh, actually, the third one, excuse me, involved the Reuben Randall play in that Redskins game. So I know one that jumps off to me, one in the Redskins game. I don't know what the seven remaining interceptions, who the targets were on those plays.
Yeah, I only heard the Jets game on the radio, but I heard David reference to Reuben stopping on the route or something. I'm like, really? He stops on his route? He doesn't even finish it. He doesn't want to play. Get rid of him. He should have been gone before Preston.
Well, Randall has been, Andre, listen, when you look at the course of his career, he has been very up and down. And, you know, even Tom Coughlin talked about that in his Monday press conference, the fact that, you know, Randle has a golden opportunity this season to be the perfect complement to to Odell Beckham with Victor Cruz hurt. And, you know, there's been games where Randle's had over 100 yards, and then there's been games when he's been very quiet. You know, they certainly would like him to show some more consistency. In terms of desire and everything else, hey, that's something that Reuben Randle can only answer. You know, everything else is speculative. And in terms of whether or not he's dealing with an injury, that's speculative, too.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but Reuben Randle doesn't look like he even wants to play. He doesn't have no fight in him, I see.
Well, like I said, you know, I mean, that's going to be a decision. Reuben Randle's a free agent. The Giants will evaluate all players after this season and they'll determine where they want to go from there. But four remaining games, Reuben Randle's on the roster. And for the sake of the Giants' offense, they hope that, obviously, he can step up and make some plays. Because Dwayne Harris at this point, you know, they're utilizing him a lot on special teams, Andre. So, you know, the need for Reuben Randle in this offense has not decreased over the last few weeks. If anything, the need for him has increased.
We've been waiting for Reuben Randle forever.
I didn't hear your last statement.
I said we're waiting for Reuben Randle to step up every game, and it's not happening.
Well, and that's why the importance of the Shane Vereens, the Will Ties, and everybody else, you know, when one player doesn't necessarily deliver consistently, you hope that somebody else can step up. And appreciate the phone call, Andre. Thanks so much for weighing in. Reuben Randle, we've talked about it dating back to the preseason.
Listen, going into this season, what did I say? I said there's two players that I want to see take that step, and that's Reuben Randle and DeMontre Moore. And unfortunately, they haven't. You know, there's still four games to be played. Playmakers need to make plays. You know, hopefully it happens from here on out. But those are the two guys that I felt defensively I wanted to see DeMontre Moore step up. Offensively, I wanted to see Reuben Randle. And it's just unfortunate. No, it has not happened.
Let's go to David in North Carolina. David, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
How are you doing, Dave?
I'm raising the stakes.
Uh-oh.
This is a poker game. Putting my chips in the middle of the table. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, can get out.
You're anteing up.
That's right. I'm raising the ante.
Okay. All right. Let's hear it.
Not going to the playoffs. This team is not going to the playoffs. And I'll tell you why. I'll touch on this. The Colors keep referencing Reuben Randle. And do you guys not remember the same kind of chatter with Team Knicks his last year, but you know, before he departed for free agency? I have a real hard time believing professional athletes are not trying are given less effort in their contract year. You know, unfortunately, guys get hurt. You know, for whatever reason, he's just not producing the way that, you know, a lot of people thought he was capable of producing. I just have a hard time believing that Reuben Randle's out there, you know, oh, shucks, I'm just going to run this route at half speed this time. Eli's not going to look my way. I just have a hard time believing it. I think Reuben Randle is just what he is. You know, he's a possession receiver, and for whatever reason, I know he's saying he's healthy, but I don't, something's going on in his lower body. He's never been a real super fast guy anyway, you know, long strider type runner, and I don't think he's healthy or 100%. And, you know, he's kind of got the same demeanor as an Akeem Nicks, you know, low key, quiet. He's not going to be real rah-rah excited, so people take that as, you know, lack of enthusiasm, or they take it as laziness.
That's a good point.
And I just don't think that's the case. The reason I don't think, you know, this team's going to make it, you can't blow that many games, that many close games, and just, you know, magically turn on the switch. You know, a couple weeks ago, or about a week ago, John made a point, you know, the team could go 8-8. But it had to win the right games or the certain games, and that, you know, one of those was against the Redskins, and then obviously you got to win that game against the Eagles last game of the season. But we've just stumped our toes so many times. I have a hard time seeing us beat Minnesota, you know, and Carolina. You know, we're definitely going to have to win one of those, and then beat probably Miami and Philly. So it's just a shame. And the last thing I'll touch on, I think what's been most depressing about this season, other than the nail biters that we can't seem to close the door on, is I'm really worried going into this off season it feels like, what, 3 or 4 years now we've been trying to rebuild this offensive line, and I still don't know what we've got. I mean, I really don't. I mean, Eric Flowers, I'm not going to say anything about him because that's a tall task to play left tackle as a rookie. But when all three of those guys were in there, we still couldn't run the ball. I mean, it hurts to watch this team try to run the ball. It really does. I mean, it hurts to watch them. Anybody complaining about McAdoo not calling any run plays aren't watching the games. I mean, this unit loses yards on run plays. They don't just run into the line of scrimmage and stop. They lose yards. So, you know, I like Rich Berg. Pugh seems like he's better at left guard, but we still just, you know, didn't get a huge push even when all three of those guys were in there and healthy on the left side. So, I'll take it off the air, you know, get your guys' comments or listen to some of the other callers' comments. But, yeah, I hate to say it. I just don't see us squeaking in this year. And it's a shame with the way the division shaped up this year. It really was there for the taking. And it's kind of embarrassing we didn't take advantage of it. Appreciate it, guys.
All right, Dave. Appreciate the phone call.
You know, I understand. I understand where he's coming from. And I understand that he's all in on how he feels. But one thing about this season, Lance, is that you don't know. You just don't know. Like, again, Philadelphia beating the Patriots. You know, I know that you don't feel that Dallas beating Washington was that shocking, but you know what? It was shocking to me, especially how well Washington was playing.
They have been very up and down.
And how poorly Dallas has been playing and with Matt Cassel as their quarterback. So you just don't know. It's been a bizarre season. It really has.
Well, especially within this division. Nobody's going to argue that in terms of the records for all four of those teams. But, you know, I guess from the mindset of from what we're hearing from the fans and even, you know, the players will tell you this, and what Tom Coughlin said in Monday's presser really resonated with me, where he says, you know, we haven't gone out and earned anything yet. And what he means by that is if you look at the Giants' wins and losses, it's been win, loss, win, loss. Now they're on a three-game skid. You know, eventually you got to break that drought. And that's what they're looking for. You don't want to constantly go into every weekend and saying, we're going to play our game, we're going to hope we win. In the event that we don't and the ball doesn't bounce our way, we'll get assistance. And that's what's pretty much happened during this three-game skid. Fortunately, nobody's been able to pull away because everybody else is losing. But eventually, you need to take grasp of your opportunity and you got to take care of business. And that's what Tom Coughlin was selling on Monday. We have not put ourselves in a position where we've earned anything. So I think that's perhaps where the fans are relating to this in terms of evaluating, you know, how things have transpired in the earlier games. The other thing I wanted to pick up before we get back to the phone calls, Dave was talking about the running game and a lot of negative yardage runs and how it's been difficult. 12 games so far this season, 8 of the 12 games, Anita, they've had 5 runs for either no gain or negative yards. That's more than half their contest this season. You could pretty much pencil in 5 runs, no gain or negative yards. I mean, compared to what they've done in previous seasons even, I mean, that is a stat that, you know, really jumps off the page there.
Now, but this is interesting. Where do you blame the lack of a running attack? Is it the offensive line not being able to produce, or is it the fact that you've got 4 guys back there that are getting anywhere between 6 to 8 carries a game, and which I feel does not allow a running back? If there's one position in football that needs to kind of get into that ebb and flow, get into a vibe, get into a groove, get into a feel of a game, it's the running back position. But you're rotating. You're going, all right, I'm going this series with Rashad, then we're going to bring in Darkwa, and then, oh, wait, we're in the red zone. Let's bring in Andre Williams. Okay, wait, we're going to go to the passing attacks. Let's bring in Shane Vereen. It's great to have all this talent in the backfield, but if they're not getting enough touches or enough series to really kind of get into a flow, is that more detrimental? So I'm not going to sit here and I'm not going to totally blame the offensive line for the lack of a rushing attack.
Oh, I agree with you.
I think there's a number of things that have come into play here that has not allowed this rushing attack to be maybe as successful as we'd like for it to be.
And there's nothing wrong with saying that there is multiple factors. You don't have to find one answer to explain why the Giants have not been able to pound the football consistently. I think it's a number of factors. Some of the things you threw out, you know, another thing that I think has hurt the Giants on the offensive side of things is, you know, the penalties have started to collect at critical junctions of games. And when you put yourself in second and longs, Anita, third and longs, those are not ideal circumstances to run the football. And what happens is, you know, you tend to give the defense an indication of, well, they're clearly going to be throwing the football. So we're not necessarily too concerned about the running game anymore, and that obviously impacts the balance of your offense. So, you know, penalties at key junctions, specifically in this Jets game, that drive I was referencing earlier, late third quarter into the fourth quarter, you know, that I think has also impacted the running game, the flow of the game, the down and distance. That's a big indication of what has occurred this season. Let's head back to the lines. Joseph is in Virginia. Joseph, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going today?
Doing well, Joseph. How's everything with you?
Doing good. Just one point I need to make. This last stretch of games, this team can't just be Odell Beckham Jr. Eli needs to spread the wealth like he did at the beginning of the season. Get the running backs involved. Get Will Tye involved more. That's how this team's going to win this last couple games. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. When they have been balanced on offense, I mean, that has been a big difference maker for the offensive fluidity. And you look at Will Tye, games where he has stepped up, you know, that has added a new dimension. There's been games where Shane Vereen's gone in 7 or 8 receptions. That's also been a difference maker. You know, the last contest, Odell Beckham did a lot of damage. Tye made some catches. But, you know, after that, I need a lot of players 2 receptions or less. Whereas opposed to games where we've seen where, hey, one guy gets 4 receptions, one guy gets 5 receptions, you know, that takes the offense to a whole other level.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I agree with you. I think that's an excellent point.
Yeah, and that's about it. We just got to hope for the best and see what happens. Crazy division this year, guys.
Absolutely, Joseph. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing
in.
All right, let's try to squeeze another call and we're going to get to some of your tweets weighing in on the Miami Dolphins and so forth. Dennis is in Miami right now. Dennis, what's happening?
Uh-oh.
Hey, how you doing, Lance, Anita?
Dennis.
Dennis in Miami. A comment and question I'll take off air.
Sure.
I'm geared up. I'm going to be there Monday night. And Anita, your mom is not kidding. It is miserable here with the weather.
Yeah,
it is
that's
raining
what I heard.
Every day like cats and dogs,
so,
and it is humid beyond compare.
So, Dennis, really quick. So I get a call from my mom. It's raining. It's pouring. And my mom lives like on a golf course down in like near Key Largo. So it's like, so the flood down there is not good, right? So she calls me. She's like, Anita, she's like, I can't get in my car. I can't drive anywhere because it's flooded. Like, it's like the skies have opened up and like they're waiting for like Noah and the Ark to show up. She's like, I think I have to go buy an SUV. I'm like, what? She's like, yeah, because I can't live like this. I'm stuck in the house because I can't drive my car. So my mom goes and looks for an SUV because it won't stop raining in Florida.
Well, did she wind up purchasing it?
I don't know. I've got to call her back. I think she went to go look yesterday. But that's how bad the weather has been. Hopefully it clears up for the game this coming Sunday.
You know, I agree. I hope so, too. My question is, it just seems like lately we've gotten away from that hurry-up offense that seemed to be so productive and effective earlier this season. And what are your guys' thoughts on why we've gotten away from that? I know we have injuries. I know the team is kind of trying to struggle. But at this point in the season, we all know they've done their gut check. They've looked in the mirror and said, who are we? And we need to step up to this. But why hasn't that continued? Do you feel it's a factor of we're lackluster, we're not really impressing anyone? Or you know, what's going on there? And I hope to see you guys Monday. Lance, I don't know if you're traveling with the team on Monday, but I'm going to try to find you where the Giants guys are. Say hello.
All right, Dennis.
Patrick McGee from Miami. Thank
you,
guys.
All right, you got it. Appreciate the phone call. It's a good question. I would say specifically, Dennis, in the last contest against the Jets, it goes back to what I was talking about with the struggles on the ground. A lot of penalties in this last game. The Giants had 8 penalties. 6 of them were on offense. When you have penalties, Anita, how are you going to implement that huddle up, no huddle up offense? It's hard because you're stopping and you're going. You got 3rd and longs. You know, the way that the Giants offense is built to have that no huddle type of mentality is when they're constantly getting 1st downs and manageable downs. That's when you see this offense clicking on all angles, all cylinders. But when you're haunted by the lack of a running game and penalties, I think it just by nature makes it almost impossible to run a no-huddle type of offense.
Well, also, I think it's a no-mistake football. In order for you to have success, you can't have mistakes because there's only so much that's working in your favor. And what is working in their favor offensively? Eli Manning and Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, at the end of the day, that's really what it comes down to. So when you don't have, you know, you don't have like a tight end one that you're able to really, really utilize in a passing attack, when you don't have an offensive line that's totally healthy and you need help from your tight end, you know, there's certain things that unfortunately are not working. And I said this the other day on my radio show on ESPN here in New York, and that is, I feel this is Eli Manning's best season, regardless of what happens, regardless if the Giants go to the postseason or not. The football that Eli Manning has been playing this season, to me, and I've been covering this my sixth year, is the best football I've seen Eli Manning play. And what's really frightening is, imagine if he had a rushing attack, Lance. Just imagine. Imagine if Victor Cruz was healthy. Imagine if Reuben Randle was more consistent and would step up. You know, it's just, it's amazing to me the season that he's having. And a lot of it, I think you've got to give credit to Ben McAdoo and the system that that is in place here, and Eli Manning being able to audible a lot, apparently 80% of the time off the line of scrimmage. But I just feel, at the end of the day, I just feel that, hands down, this is Eli's best season.
Well, the numbers show that. As I mentioned, he's on pace for a career year. So, I mean, we had a caller call up earlier, I think, who said he was reading some blogs and there was chatter about, you know, Eli getting some blame. Eli Manning is having a superb season statistically. So he's the last guy that you should bring to the forefront to critique here or there. Let's head to some tweets before we wrap up the program. I know a lot of people weighing in. Some great stats by Carl Martinez, who is a big follower of the show, at the CNotes. Two stats that he throws out there to emphasize what I was talking about earlier on the program. So 33% of the rushes by the Giants this season have gone for 1, 0, or negative yards. In comparison, the number's actually relatively close to last season. In comparison, it was 34% last season. 152 of 448. Then the other thing was, a caller was asking about the interceptions for Eli Manning and who was targeted on those interceptions. Carl writes down, this is the breakdown of his 10 interceptions. Randle 3, Beckham 3, Harris 2, Vereen 1, Dinnell 1. So Beckham and Randle were targeted on 6 of Eli Manning's 10 interceptions and Harris on 2. That's pretty much a balance. It's not as if it's a lopsided one guy versus the other. Pretty even balance if you wanted to look at it from that angle. I don't think there's an argument there to say, well, when he only goes to one specific receiver, that means trouble. That doesn't necessarily reflect in terms of the numbers that are showcased based on the targets. Let's take a look at some of these other tweets here in terms of Giants fans weighing in on what is going on. I know there was a question about the Miami rushing defense and how the Miami rushing defense has been struggling this season, and I pointed that out earlier in the program, and the reason why I don't want to say that it's a home run opportunity is because of the fact that the Redskins were 30th against the run 2 weeks ago, and the Giants didn't necessarily take advantage of that. It is a juicy matchup on paper. Miami's given up 135 yards rushing. That's 30th in the NFL, so it does look good on paper. And this was the tweet here at AJ Marshall 3. Miami run defense, not that good. This is a great opportunity to get their run game going. And on paper, I would agree with you, AJ. It's just sometimes ideal matchups on paper haven't necessarily translated to the X's and O's. So we have yet to see that everything on paper translates effectively. That's going to be something totally to watch, moving forward as we see some of these key Giants matchups. AJ also writes, Giants lead the league with 14 players on IR. We had mentioned two more guys going on IR, and you mentioned, I mean, this has been a storyline. It's unfortunate. It's hard to predict injuries, but last few seasons, they have lost key players. You know, we're not talking about the fourth and fifth guy on the depth chart. We're talking about starters and the first backups, unfortunately, have been bitten by the injury bug the last few years.
Yeah, and listen, this is the state of where the NFL is right now. You know, it's in. I said it when we opened up the show. To me, this is 2015 is the season of next man up. And you need that depth. You need to be able to bring in those free agents. You need to draft properly so that your guys that are next man up are ready to go and ready to contribute. And on top of that, you got to hope that one line of whatever position it is doesn't get multiple injuries. And unfortunately, that hasn't been the case. But again, keep in mind, it's not just the Giants. I mean, it's the Ravens are just ridiculous. What's going on with the Patriots is ridiculous. Yeah. And again, the Patriots have lost two in a row, and a lot of people think that the Patriots are going to lose to the Houston Texans this week. That would be three in a row. Unfortunately, you can't control injury. It's part of the game.
One last tweet I want to throw out before we wrap up the show, and this was us talking about the running game. You mentioned the rotation of the running backs. This is an interesting point that Drew brings up at Andy and Ken. Can't blame the running back rotation this year. He writes, think about the running backs in the past, 2010-11 season, Bradshaw, Brandon Jacobs, and Danny Ware. Now, they had rotations in the past. I'd have to look up the distribution of carries, but it is a valid point that in seasons past, the Giants have relied on three guys. Even Derek Ward is another guy I'd throw in with those
two.
Yeah,
but we're talking about four right now.
We are talking about four, but they've had volume, I guess, spread amongst multiple running backs in the past is what he's referencing here on Twitter.
And also, I think you could say the same thing about the Patriots, but this is what Bill Belichick does. He goes into a game and says, okay, this is going to be our main back. This is going to be our featured back that we're going to give the majority of the carries to. And we're talking, what, 15, 18? I don't think any of the backs for the Patriots or Bill Belichick have 20-plus carries a game. That's not the way it works there. But at least 12, 15 carries a game to kind of get into an ebb and flow and then sprinkle in. I would really need to sit and go and look back at the stats of the games when you did have – you know, Brandon Jacobs and Ahmad Rashad's
a decent football player, from what I heard. But anyway.
So I need to go back and I need to look at those stats in regard to when they played and see, like, did they say, okay, well, coming into this game, you know, we're gonna really feature Ahmad Bradshaw and then sprinkle in Brandon Jacobs. How were they utilized in a rushing attack? I think that's important as well.
Well, from what I recall, just off the top of my head, it wasn't a 50-50 split. It was definitely 2-1, and then, you know, Ware would get sprinkled in on third downs and so forth. So I would have to look over the numbers. But it's at least a decent point to say, hey, the Giants have thrived in years past when they've had a rotation of running backs. Obviously, the offensive line was extremely consistent back then, too. You have to apply that to the equation. Appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets over the last 60 minutes. Good discussion, good interaction,
it's been a
as
fun
always.
Show.
Absolutely. And it will continue tomorrow with a new edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live at noon Eastern. And we will have Big Blue Kickoff Live, again, you said, for the Dolphins all through Monday.
Yeah, keep in mind, because it's a Monday night football game, different day here at the facility on Wednesday. Player interviews, Tom Coughlin's press conference live show that you can watch on MSG, all of that takes place tomorrow. Thursday is going to be a huge day. Thursday and Friday pretty much are the big days here at the facility as the media covers this team and gets ready. So those player interviews and of course, Tom Coughlin's press conference, all that is on Thursday.
That'll be 11 a.m. Eastern tomorrow. Wednesday is Thursday this week. And then Thursday is Friday. That's the best way to look at it. Everything's pushed back a day. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
He's got through. 35, 30.